Today great. Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
The great day to arise and sing on the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Today we're going to celebrate the lasting legacy of Pete Seeger, his music, his mission, his social activism, with an author who's determined to bring it to a whole new generation. What a fabulous idea. We'll talk about that. Celebrate with some great music of Pete Seeger's and those who he influenced. And we'll also do our Inspiration to Action Challenge. Yes, yes, we're going to take on the current cultural cacophony in measured doses. Don't be nervous. I see the Twitter feed already. We'll get to it. And if you're listening live with us, winding down June, it is Friday, June 30th, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. You know about our 24/7 Twitter tango. Chime in when it works for you live or on podcast. Davey writes. Social media maven Aurora in the booth with our producer Trudy Hart. They tell us the Facebook page and the PopNet chat box are open for the show. So, you know, have at it how it works for you. Show today, by the way, brought to you in part by Dunkin' Donuts. Enjoy that great Dunkin' Donuts coffee now where you buy groceries. Also by Walgreens. Enjoy summer savings on everything you need from suntan lotion to those beach goodies at the corners of Happy and Healthy at Walgreens. And the aforementioned pals at PopNet, arts, culture, and conversation on air, online. PopNet features select editions of the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show and those great roundtables, too. We had some fun yesterday with you-know-who's tweeting about you-know-what, but we'll get to that later, I know. First, though, I want to welcome Lita Schubert to the show. She's the author of this fabulous new book for young readers. It's called Listen, How Pete Seeger Got America Singing. And boy, oh boy, Lita, do we need a little Pete Seeger in our current cultural consciousness. Hey, Lita, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and boy, do we ever.
We really do. I mean, channel that energy and that activism, and I think one of the quotes that you open with or your PR folks open with is the idea that, you know, participation, that's what's going to save the human race, Pete Seeger said, and people have got to get involved, and they've got to rise up, and he was all about that. He was about so much, his energy, the music, and it's great that you're putting this book together for kids. Because he was about the kids, too. He did all those sing-alongs. He went into schools. He did all that outreach. But talk to us about your affinity for Pete Seeger and how you came to this project.
Well, Pete was my hero my whole life. I grew up with him. I mean, not with him, but listening to him. And my parents listened to him. They listened to Pete and to the Almanac Singers and to the Weavers. And there's a rumor, which is I can't possibly substantiate because, damn, everybody's dead. And yeah. He came to my nursery school, and my parents were involved in setting up the first interracial public nursery school in Southeast Washington. And the rumor is that he came and sang there. And then I just listened to him my whole life. He was a beacon of hope in the wilderness, and I saw him a lot of times, and I followed him about and went to some of his concerts and saw him every time I could. And so, you know, he was a hero. So when he died, I just thought, okay, it's my turn. It's my time to give back something to kids and to grown-ups and to everybody about him.
Yeah, passing on that legacy, which is so great. And he really was about getting everybody involved. His life is fascinating, and you do point it out for young readers in this book. And it's also, we should say, great pictures. Is it Raul Colon who does the pictures, great illustrations?
Yes, yes. Boy, was really I lucky
nice.
When, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really lovely book. But really, his background is fascinating for those folks who don't know. And a lot of people do know about his activism, certainly in this area, where in the Hudson Valley area, New York State, where he was involved with Clearwater in the last, decades of his life. He was very big on the environment. But he started out, you know, in the old folk traditions, and his parents had a kind of a classical background. He also had a very, you know, pretty important education, you know, and all this kind of stuff that he left behind and hit the road. Talk a little bit about that, his background.
Well, his parents were classical musicians, as you said. His father was now what we would call an ethnomusicologist, and his mother was classically trained. And one of the funny things that happened in his early life was they went on the road in a homemade trailer. They were very adventurous. And they made this little trailer, and they drove around the South with the idea of bringing classical music to the masses, you know, the underserved proletariat. And it went the other way. They started hearing the music of the underserved proletariat, and they became converts to folk music. And it's kind of amusing. And then they sent him off to boarding school, and one of my favorite discoveries was a letter that he wrote to his mother when he was a wee child. And he said, can I read this little note?
Sure.
Let me find it. I have a long timeline in the end of the book. And he wrote, and he was about, I guess about 13 or 14, he fell in love with the banjo, and he wrote to his mother, do you think that I should spend $15 or $20 of my savings in the bank to buy a good banjo with a nice tone and everything? I'd like to a lot, and honestly, I think that it would be worth it because I'm awfully interested in the banjo, and I'd like to learn how to play it really well, you know, so I can dance around on it the way some of the guys who play over the radio can. Isn't that just the sweetest thing? And, of course, he became, like, the world's most famous banjo player for a while.
I know. Wow.
And then only a few years later.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, right? That's great. Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, exactly. And a few years later, he heard the five-string banjo for the first time at the Mountain Dance and Folk Festival in Asheville, and that changed his life and the life of many, many, many people. I myself learned how to play the five-string banjo from his book, How to Play the Five-String Banjo, which is still in print. And back then, the only way to learn was to sit with a record player and pick the needle on and off the record and hope that you got it in the same place and, you know, listen and take the book and try to figure out what everybody was doing. It was great fun.
Great fun.
So, yeah,
Great determination that people had, you know, that he had.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have YouTube, you know, it was the dark ages.
Exactly. Right. I mean,
yeah.
Before technology, people were still doing this stuff because you wanted to.
Yeah.
Exactly. The love. It transcends all generations, all the types of technology, et cetera. Yeah, of course.
Exactly.
But, you know, he became this, I guess because of the early roots, like you said, his parents sort of stuck the bug in him to travel and to get immersed in other people's music and all of this openness that he had to celebrate that music and then bring it to people of all ages. And how did the activism coordinate with it? I mean, where did that come from? Was that also organic, just sort of developed along the way?
It developed along the way, and it really came into play when he met Woody Guthrie. And Woody was older than he was, and, Pete also met Alan Lomax, who was recording the folk culture of the American South, and Pete worked with him for a while, and also started hanging out at the Library of Congress. But when he met Woody and joined the Almanac Singers, you know, it sort of changed his life and pushed him in a political direction more so than he had already gone. And he formed the Weavers, and they sang political songs. And I think he started to see the power of music to change the direction and the course of people's lives in the 40s. And, of course, then he immediately came in under the watchful eye of the FBI. And it was interesting to me. One of the things I did learn that surprised me was how the FBI started watching him, which was when he wrote a letter. He was out in California, and his wife, Toshi, who was of Japanese-American heritage, was of Japanese-American heritage, and he wrote a letter protesting the return of the Japanese-Americans to Japan, which sounds awfully familiar and awfully relevant for today. And it caught the FBI's eyes, and they said, well, this is un-American, and he's protesting this government policy. And they started watching him, and they watched him for 30 years, and he has a file that's about 1,800 pages long. And I've got a link to that entire file on my website. I read much of it, and it's
kind of interesting things. Were there anything in there? I mean, because can you imagine Pete Seeger being somebody who would be the enemy of the state, so to speak? You know,
yeah.
What was in there?
It's pretty dreary. It's, you know, all the places that he sang and the rumors and the informants and the lies and the all the terrible things that they thought about him and that they tried to catch him doing, and it's very dreary and depressing, and you know, I also read his testimony before the House Un-American Activities Committee. I've read it many times, and they just browbeat the poor man, and he refused to give in. And he did something very interesting, which was when everybody else was, all the other people called before HUAC, and I don't know how familiar your listeners are with that time, but it was a very dark time in American history. And it wasn't just the Hollywood Ten who were persecuted, but many, many, many people, especially around Washington, government employees who lost their jobs, lost their livelihood. Some fled the country, went to Mexico, went to England. Some never recovered. Some committed suicide. Anyway, Pete was called before HUAC, and most people had taken the Fifth Amendment, which is the right against self-incrimination. But Pete took the First Amendment, which is, of course, the right of free speech and the right of people to assemble. And he just refused to say who he had sung for and what he had done. And but he kept offering to sing them a song. And they kept saying, no, no, we don't want to hear your songs. And he said this, I have sung for Americans of every political persuasion, and I am proud that I never refused to sing to an audience, no matter what religion or color of their skin or situation in life. I have sung in hobo jungles, and I have sung for the Rockefellers, and I am proud that I have never refused to sing for anybody. That is the only answer I can give along that line. But it didn't stop HUAC. It didn't stop Chairman Taverner or Chairman Walter or Mr. Taverner, his interrogators. They just browbeat him. They just went after him, and they said, you know, didn't you sing for the communists? And he just kept saying, I have sung for everybody. And
everybody.
They were terrible. And reading it is so chilling, and it just makes you realize what a fascist takeover would look like.
Yeah, wow. And to think today, you know, we have Donald Trump as president, whose mentor was Roy Cohn, who was, of course,
Oh my God.
Joe McCarthy's right-hand man. So.
I know. Yeah, who was trained by Cohn. Yep.
Very intriguing but bleak picture that we are in the midst of right now, which is why I think it's great to have this book to highlight, you know, somebody who rallied against all of this stuff. I mean, he was decades. God bless him. He lived to a long, you know, he didn't quite make it to 100, but almost, right?
94.
I remember when they had the 90th birthday celebration and all these people that came out and honored him, and he was still sharp as a tack. And
did you get to go to that?
And showed up at that festival every year, I think, up until the very end.
Yes,
close to it.
Yes.
And just amazing. I mean, he performed at Barack Obama's first inaugural, I believe, singing This Land Is Your
That's
Land.
That's right.
I mean, just a lot of, just amazing. But, I mean, what do you think he'd make of this whole Trumpian era? I guess he'd just be fighting along with everybody else at this point, right?
I think he'd be horrified, but I think he'd be leading the protests, and I wish he were. And, you know, he said that we have a 50-50 chance of surviving the next 100 years, and I think it's dropping because he's not here to lead us in song. And we need people. We need people out there. Well, of course, there's an incredible amount of protesting going on, more than I think anybody ever dreamed of. But we don't have the songs yet, and we really need that music. I know that
great. I always say that. You know, it's something about it that cuts through a lot, and it can bring people together in so many great ways. So, you know, like he said, he would sing for anybody. And that music would appeal to people on all sides of the aisle, too, I think. And it just... it's a great unifier. It's a universal language, and it really can.
That is so true, Amy Beth. Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, people, the civil rights movement was guided by its music. I don't know how people sang in jails. They sang on picket lines. They sang while they were being hosed. They sang. It was a singing movement, and I don't know how it would have happened without the songs to keep people strong. And the same thing with the anti-war movement, and the same thing with Ban the Bomb, and the same thing with Occupy. Even during Occupy, people were singing, and Pete was leading them. We need songs. We need that group singing. We need the power of standing together and raising our voices. We need it. We need it.
Yeah, the power. That's right, the power of getting up and singing, and that was what he was about, the combination of all that and the great energy that it brings, and the youth. The youth that it gave him for so long. I mean, he was just amazing.
How
long he lasted and was so energetic for so long, which was so great.
Yeah, he was amazing. You know, when I submitted
fascinating
him,
book, and you're bringing it to new, and the idea of bringing it to children, was there a reason for that? Because you wanted to bring it to a new generation and give you the genesis of the children's book aspect?
Absolutely. I've spent my whole life connecting children in books. That's what I do, is like either read to them or write for them or teach or something. And that's what I was a librarian, I taught, and that's what I really care about, is sort of changing the world through children in books. So, yeah, that's why I wrote it as a children's book. I would never have thought of writing
it. I think it's great because we got to keep those stories and those people alive for the next generation so they can be inspired by it and get that spark and go out there and do a little Pete Seeger for yourself. It's a great, intriguing book. It's called Listen, How Pete Seeger Got America Singing. Lita Schubert is the author. with pictures by Raul Colon. Where can we get it? I know you have a website. It's letaschubert.com, and we will post it as we do. We post all the shows as podcasts when they're ready for it, and I will post your link to your website as well. You're not really active on Twitter, I know, but you do have a Facebook page, yes?
Yes, and people can get it anywhere, local indie or the big guys, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but, you know, wherever.
I'm kind of losing you, but maybe it's just on my end. Maybe hopefully people can hear you. All right, Lita, hey, thank you so much for joining us. And this is a fabulous book and a fabulous time to bring it out. Listen, Pete Seeger got America Singing, Lita Schubert. We will post all the details, of course. And please come back and see us, okay?
Okay, thank you, Amy Beth. Thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Take care. Lita Schubert.
Okay, bye-bye.
Pete Seeger, his legacy lives on. Here's one from that great 90th birthday bash we were talking about on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Reach out. We'll get your tweets and calls next.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
Read Pete Seeger on the Amy Beth Berkley Show, his anti-war anthem, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. And that gathering of all stars at the 90th birthday bash for Mr. Seeger, We Shall Overcome, indeed. Hey, thanks again to Lita Schubert. She's the author of that fascinating new book for children, Listen, How Pete Seeger Got America Singing. Check it out and pass it on to the new generation. We will post the details. LitaSchubert.com is her website. Details will be posted for you on our Twitter feed and Facebook page, along with the podcast when it becomes available. As you know, all the shows are archived as such. So reach out, tell me what's on your mind. Twitter feed is AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505, should you be listening live on Friday, June 30th. Wow, we're sashaying into the July 4th weekend already, right? We'll talk about that a bit, too. Facebook page, pop in the chat box, also open. Twitter feed, AB Writes, a couple of folks chiming in about the interview. Bryn says, hey, good interview, great music, love Pete Seeger, need that energy now. For sure, Bryn, I'm with you on that one. Fritz says, as always, good rapport with your guest, good show, loving it, loving it, loving it. Well, thank you. Fritz, I love it. I love the love. We got a lot of folks, though, chiming in about the big Trump story. I know. We talked about this yesterday on PopNet. We talked about it on social media. The crazy Twitter fingers are at it again, the new deal with Mika Brzezinski and Morning Joe. And my comment yesterday was, geez, I wish he would start tweeting about me. He talks about crazy Morning Joe, low rated, don't listen any, don't watch it anymore, but people tell me they're saying bad things about me. It's not low rated anymore. Everybody's talking about it and watching it now. I mean, it's so crazy. It's outrageous. You know about the tweets already, what he said, and just his obsession with women's appearances and this idea of women bleeding, which is strange. There's something wrong with this guy. I think he's unhinged. I think it's a basic, right? Even Republicans are coming out, even though they're kind of soft approaching it. And is there fake outrage? Because some people are saying it's phony outrage, that if a show had been critical of Obama, they would have been lambasted. They probably would have been lambasted on some, in some areas and from some corners of the media, of course. The problem is Obama would not be the one doing the lambasting. Do you see the difference here? I mean, this is my point. I don't even know what they said because, frankly, I find Morning Joe a fairly unwatchable show. There are too many people going on, and Mika and Joe and that dynamic is on the icky end, in my opinion. It's not my favorite people, but certainly she should not have been targeted that way. And certainly in the wake of the fact that she just lost her father a couple of weeks ago is also pretty inhumane. But the reality is it's a TV show. Whether it's a low-rated cable TV show or not, he says low-rated, who knows? That's all he cares about is ratings. That's a big thing with him. But he's the president of the United States. He should be above this fray. He should not be down in the gutter squabbling with media people or other people, celebrities, et cetera. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's fundamentally ridiculous. That's the problem. That's the point. Besides which, we live in the United States of America. We are allowed to criticize politicians and presidents. And by the way, Donald Trump was the one who spearheaded that ridiculous, grotesque fiction that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. Was he not the birther-in-chief for years? He played off of that. He fueled his own campaign and his own popularity with that stupid nonsense that he knew was garbage, or should have known was garbage, and pretended he had private investigators and all this kind of nonsense going on. So he was allowed to spew that garbage because we live in a country that allows it. Now that he's in office, he's complaining that people are spewing what he considers garbage at him. Let it go. Just let it go. I mean, somebody told a story today, I think it may have been on Morning Joe or CNN, where they were talking about this whole controversy, about when George W. Bush was under a lot of attacks in the media, and Keith Olbermann at the time had a show on MSNBC and went off and ranted about something with the Iraq war, I guess, and somebody said, I just want you to know this happened tonight and you should know about it. And George W. Bush said, Keith Olbermann, what's he ranting about me for? I love that guy. He's a sports center. Because he didn't watch this kind of stuff. He watched the sports news. That's all he did. Keep yourself away from the TV. This guy watches TV 24/7, and he is so thin-skinned and so worried about everything anybody says about him. You should just keep it on Fox, because Fox will just continue to sell your line of propaganda, basically, and go along with the gag and defend you and say you're wonderful, etc. By the way, my biggest thing, and I'm going to get to your tweets in a second. I didn't mean to go on this little mini rant, but hey, it's my show. His wife, remember Melania when during the campaign she was going to make cyberbullying her big campaign issue and her big thing that she became first lady? Well, she's first lady, 6 months and running, and there's no sign of this campaign. Start with the guy that lives with you, the bully in chief, and work on it. No, she issued a statement yesterday from her office that said the first lady has always said that when somebody attacks her husband, he will punch 10 times harder. So we're all in the mix here. We're all in the mud. We're all in the mix. And if anything goes, and it's okay to take pot shots at media people and everybody else. Again, it's punching down. Even Nixon was the one who said punch up. You got nowhere to go if you're the president, so you shouldn't be punching down. You shouldn't be taking pot shots at the media. I don't really know what they said. I think they were making fun of the fact that he had that fake news, that phony, ginned-up Time magazine cover that said how brilliant he was and how successful The Apprentice was posted in all his different golf clubs, and it turned out that it was a ginned-up fake thing. You can get them all. Okay, so this is a guy who has a history of making up his own fake news. He worked it in the New York tabloids, as we know, pretending he was a publicist by the name of John Miller or John Barron, calling up to get stories placed about himself, and it worked for him for a while. And all of this stuff was maybe entertaining or mildly amusing or mildly irritating to people in the New York area, and I remember hearing his stories growing up, and you know, he was a tabloid fodder, et cetera, in this area. He didn't become a big national star, I guess, until The Apprentice. And then people in the mid part of the country who liked The Apprentice didn't know about this other nonsense or didn't avail themselves of it. As Michael Moore pointed out, they liked his style and they thought he was rich and could get things done. And that's why he won. But with it, you get all this garbage and this baggage. And you have Sarah Huckabee Sanders coming out saying, well, they elected a fighter, so of course he's going to fight back. I mean, these people defending it, it's outrageous to me. What's your take? Twitter feed, AB Rights, let's do it, because you're into it, I know. Susan says, today's Trump tweets confirm that he hates women, hates journalists, loses control when criticized, bullies, and threatens. And yes, he's crazy. Don't hold back, right? Richard says, it's so odd that Donald Trump only calls real news fake news, and he calls the National Enquirer real news when it's fake, and he knows it. Yeah, he's got his hand in the pocket of the New York, of the National Enquirer, rather, because he's friendly with the owner. And apparently they told a story on Morning Joe about how, I guess they were kind of trying to hold Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski hostage with some story they were going to run, which I guess they did run. But they kept calling and saying, well, if you call and apologize to Donald Trump, he will then call off the dog, so to speak. And they said, let him run the story. And I don't even know what the story was, but they ran something. And apparently they had the National Enquirer harassing Mika's daughters, who were on the young end, like they're upper teenagers, but they're still like 18 or 19 years old kind of thing. I mean, it's just, it's outrageous. It really is, I think. But Jennifer says, well, if Morning Joe had called Obama utterly stupid, mentally ill, the media would have been outraged. She says, so says Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Well, as I said, yeah, I think that's true. There would be some outrage from some corners of the media, but it would be the media that would be outraged, but not Obama. See what I'm saying? Obama himself would have stayed above the fray because there were plenty of things that they said about Obama on Fox News. I mean, Sean Hannity was willing to pay the freight for the Obamas to move back to Kenya, as I recall one time. Donald Trump was on all these shows saying horrible things about Obama and the whole birther nonsense. I mean, this kind of stuff went on, and Obama managed to stay above the fray because, as Michelle Obama used to say, when they go low, we go high. You just ignore this stuff. And that is not just the Obamas that did it. The Clintons had to do it. The Bushes had to do it. Everybody has to do it. I mean, you don't come out swinging every time. I'm not saying they never commented on any one, maybe one comment once in a while, but not every person has to get this Twitter barrage. It has worked for him, I guess, so far. He's going to keep doing it because his base stays intact. I guess maybe he'll do it until, this is pretty funny, Ed has a very funny Twitter, Trump Twitter cartoon, but, you know, I can see you, but you can't see me on the radio, so we'll have to post that one on social media to take a look at it. Boca Vista, though, says attacks, no Morning Joe, attacks on POTUS and the Trump train, where not only do we approve of Trump tweets, we applaud them. And then he retweets the hideous thing. So there are people out there who do and say, he's a fighter, he's going to do it, and that's okay. And there you have it. And he's waging a war with the media. Not such a hot idea, in my opinion. What's yours? Twitter feed is AB Wright. Phone line is 347-857-4505. We like respectful tweets here, and we usually get them, because I always say, you put out the energy, you get back. You get back what you put out. You know what I'm saying. Yeah, no, it's Friday. It's summer. We're on vacation, sort of. More great music, though. And Pete Seeger certainly inspired, as Lita Schubert said, we need more of these songs. And some of the old ones keep coming up and over again. They're good to hear. Here's the classic Pete Seeger tune, If I Had a Hammer, the classic way with Peter, Paul, and Mary on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning, I'd a hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd a hammer out of danger, I'd a hammer out of warning, I'd a hammer out of love between my brothers and my sisters.
Springsteen from the great Seeger Sessions on the Amy Beth Arcuri Show, and Pay Me My Money Down, the classic Seeger tune, If I Had a Hammer, from Peter, Paul, and Mary, I'd hammer out justice. Boy, we need Pete Seeger in this Trumpian age, indeed. Celebrating that great legacy of Pete Seeger, the youth, the invigoration, the mission, it all comes together and keeps you going. Boy, oh boy, creativity is the answer. Talking with Lita Schubert, the author of that great book about Pete Seeger, Listen, How Pete Seeger Got America Singing, and just about the creative process. Immerse yourself in it, and you got so many great rewards ahead of you. But if you're just looking for the glory, maybe you're in the wrong location, avocation, whatever, if you know what I'm saying. But just fall into it, and you can get some great inspiration from it. It's so compelling. It's so great. Show up at the page. It's frustrating sometimes, I know, but the Inspiration Action Challenge is working for a lot of folks, and I'm so gratified when the success stories come pouring in. I want to give a shout-out today to Rory in Poughkeepsie, New York, not too far from us, up the line a bit, says, I'm embracing my life as both a writer and a visual artist, coming out of the closet, so to speak, or the corporate cubicle, as it were, embracing the dream that I've had for a long time and nobody knew about. Wow. And says, give me the courage and some of the strength to do it. I'm trying it. Not sure how it goes. As you always say, though, it's part of the journey, right? Yes, it is, Rory. Hey, congratulations. Keep going, please. Keep doing the journaling. Do the challenge and just plain old journaling as you're going. I think that helps process the good and the bad feelings of your day's work and toil at the canvas or the page, etc. So try it and sell us. Keep us posted, please. Congratulations. I'm thrilled for you. If the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, please give us a shout-out over here, because I'd give you a shout-out in return. I think you deserve that accolade, but also you help spark other people on, and that's kind of what we're here for. You know, it's the idea that music brings people together, and we bring each other together and encourage each other in our endeavors, I think. So reach out, and I'll give you that shout-out. Also, if you need to get a nudge in the right direction, you feel like you're kind of in a trap maybe or a ditch, reach out there, too. We can start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one is on me. I'll be happy to give you a primer on the challenge, some other tips and tricks to move you in that positive, more productive, creative direction. So reach out to the website, amybetharkawy, ARKAWY.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed, or Google me, and we'll get back to you. Probably about 3 weeks or so, because it's busy now, and it's the summer, et cetera, but I will get back to you, I promise, and we'll put you on a good road, I hope. And while you're at the website, you can peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mysteries, other goodies available for ebook and paperback. You can also chime in about your big story and Forgotten 45 requests, all that kind of good stuff over at the website. It's amybetharkawy, ARKAWY.com. Twitter feed is up and running at AB Writes. Our phone line, if you are listening live on Friday, June 30th, wow, 347-857-4505. Do you have any big weekend plans? 4th of July weekend, kind of, I guess, today through Tuesday, right? Because it's Monday. Well, Tuesday is the actual 4th of July. You know, my usual thing, please drive safe and all that good stuff if you're headed out there. No messing around with fireworks, firecrackers. Go to the big shows. They do a better job. You know, the professionals, they know what they're doing. The Grucci Brothers, et cetera, right? They always have them. Every place seems to have them, even small towns. But leave it to the pros, because people get played around with those little mini firecrackers and you get all kinds of injuries. Not good. You want to keep your fingers intact, as they say. Hey, the Twitter feed is abuzz, talking about Trump, et cetera. A lot of folks are chiming in about the Trump tweets. And distraction. So this is Bernie. He wants us to talk about other stuff because his agenda is horrible and going nowhere. Maybe it's strategy. I don't know if it's strategy, though. I think he just has bad impulse control, and somebody should take that darn phone away from him. He just can't help himself. He doesn't have a thick enough skin, and he's 71 years old, and it's a little sad to have somebody in that position at that age. But this is the stuff we say every week. It's crazy. I know. Safi says, every time it seems that the man has reached a new low as he could possibly go, he plummets further into the depths. Yeah, I hear you on that one. It's true. He just keeps going. We always say can't get any lower than this, but maybe it can. I don't know. Mark says, other people are fired for what they tweet. We admonish all others for speaking off the cuff, but we're told to ignore or take lightly the Trump tweets. It's just his style. Yeah, well, I agree, Marcus. He's getting a pass. How long can we give him a pass? We'll see. I mean, he's not going to be impeached anytime soon, that's for sure, although they do have Mike Pence waiting in the wings. So if the Republicans get really disgusted with him, I guess they can do that. Meanwhile, the health care plan has been scrapped for now. They're going to go back to the drawing board after the July 4th recess. So another week, they'll come back next week and try to hash something out before the August recess. They have that mandatory where they have to take a month off in August. I wish we all had that mandatory month off in August, right? They still get paid. I love it. Maybe they should dock their pay. We'll see. It doesn't look good so far. Again, the whole idea they have to make a win because they're so determined to repeal Obamacare because they promised they'd do it. I get it, except you promised you'd improve it and you replace it with something better, not something worse. So kudos to people like Susan Collins from Maine and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska and Dean Heller from Nevada. These Republican senators are saying, hell no, this is not going to work for us because our people are going to suffer. It's not about party people. It's about the people. It should be about the people. And eventually, see, my point is, how politically savvy is it to pass something that's garbage, that's going to hurt people? Because eventually, maybe it'll take a couple of years before people realize it's getting worse. And I'm not saying you shouldn't fix it, and you should fix it. You know, they always say, mend it, don't end it. I agree, because I got a notice from my insurance company that premiums are going up again next year. They always have to give you a notice some months in advance. It keeps, you know, I understand that. I'm all for that. But fix it. Don't make it harder for people and make the premiums go even skyrocketing high. So people will have the choice not to have to buy it. They won't be able to buy it. That isn't fixing it. It's returning it to what it was before Obamacare. So, and allowing insurance companies to once again either issue junk policies that mean nothing or be able to knock people off their policies once they actually need them. It's like this legalized scam. I don't get it. It's horrifying to know, and I covered this when I was covering years ago when we were watching and monitoring, covering the Obamacare bill and how what a mess that was because the insurance companies pretty much ruled the roost then too. It's just, you know, so there were definite improvements and definite regulations that helped people and saved people from the draconian measures that the insurance companies were allowed to do for so many years. But the costs are prohibitive, and they have to work on that. So why don't you work on it and work on it with the Democrats? Come together. Have the sensible people, and there are some sensible people in both parties. You do have the Susan Collins. You do have Murkowski, as I said, and Dean Heller and Rob Portman and other people who are, Capito from West Virginia. She knows West Virginia has the most Medicaid people per capita in their state. She knows that she can't go home with a bill that is going to gut that funding for the opioid epidemic that has been a scourge on her state and so many other states. I mean, it's ridiculous. Kellyanne Conway, they rolled her out of the basement. She's got to go back. On the Sunday shows last week, coming on TV and having the audacity to say things like, you can't just throw money at the problem. People who have addiction should have willpower. You know, this is a person who's not thinking through things, you know, not really giving a thoughtful response to something. Of course, it's not just about money, but that is a glib response and an idea to, again, re-victimize people and say, oh, you don't deserve it. Or the other thing she said was people on Medicaid will have other options if they get a job. Again, insensitive, and the truth is a lot of people who are on Medicaid are elderly people, disabled people. They can't get a job, or they're beyond their working years, whatever it may be. I mean, simple, glib answers are not the answer, and some Republicans show their heartlessness when they come up with that. You know, it's not about party. I always say I'm looking for common ground here, and I do think there's some sensible people on both sides of the aisle. Come together and do some good work. And enough already with the nonsense and the tweeting. But Donald Trump, yeah, I guess maybe it is a diversionary tactic. I don't know, but I think it's impulse control. I think that's more the problem. He just can't help himself. That's the problem. It's just crazy. Lots of folks not happy about Donald Trump. Trump, stop it already, will you? So says Darren. Phelps, this guy cannot go low enough, can he? When will he go lower? So says the drunken tenor. No, the drunken tenor says, if you ever need Trump tweets sung, opera makes everything better. And I think they posted a thing that should be funny to listen to. Colling says, Trump can't get any lower, can he? Or can he? Yeah, or can he? Exactly. 347-857-4505 gets you into the conversation on Friday, June 30th. Wow. And the Twitter feed is the 24/7 proposition at AB Rights. We also have our Facebook page open and our PopNet chat box. Anything coming through there? Don't see it yet, but it is there. So here we go. Let's do some more great music from Pete Seeger. This one with another one of the greats, Joan Baez, and Lonesome Valley. Remembering Pete Seeger and celebrating that great legacy. We need it now on the Amy Beth Dark Commission. Thank you.
Copper bosses.
songs. I guess we could call that one a Joan Baez sandwich. Joe Hill from the great Joan Baez. Kingston Trio, Pete Seeger's classic Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and Joan Baez with Pete Seeger, and A Walk in a Lonesome Valley. It is the end of the Thurkwi Show. We're celebrating that legacy of Pete Seeger, his music, his mission, and getting it together. Indeed. Twitter feed is AB Wright. A few folks chiming in about the music. Carl says, hey, great show. I love the songs. Great way you tie it all together, too. Really love it. Thank you, Carl. And Cheryl says, good to hear some great old music. We need the music to help us get through the tough times. For sure we do, Cheryl. I'm with you on that one. And our conversation with author Lita Schubert earlier, we were talking about, you know, she said we need new singers, new songs. Sometimes the old songs work, new voices add to it. One of the younger generation of folks who are out there in the trenches doing some great music and some protest songs, some folk songs, and a variety of stuff, too. Annie DeFranco, she was at the birthday bash for Pete Seeger some years back, and she took it on the road, too, with a classic. Here she is doing one at Mountain Stage.
I got an invitation to Pete Seeger's 90th birthday party. That was a good time. And a whole cavalcade of, it was a folk fiesta, people. There at Madison Square Garden. Birthday party. But so we all got our folk assignments before the show, you know, to play songs that Pete had written or just, you know, put out there into the world. And so I got asked to do this old labor song from the 1930s. And that's for the verses, but the chorus is the same. And if you feel like singing, I love to have backup. So go for it.
Thank you. You'll go a long ways, and I wish you'd start now.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me, and that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Provocative tune from Pete Seeger. What have you learned in school today? Uh-huh. All those lies they tell. Exposed in music. Powerful stuff. And the Byrds had a big hit with it on the pop charts back in the 60s, but before that it was, of course, Pete Seeger who put the biblical verse to music and sang it with Judy Collins on a public broadcasting show he actually funded himself. Turn, 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 of course. And Annie DeFranco, one of the younger generation of troubadour singer-songwriters, the old protest song, Which Side Are You On Now? Pete Seeger, by the way, you know, you talk about funding his own stuff and the toil that people go through. You know, you think about the glory of it all. There's so much work that goes into it. And today, the arts are under fire again, PBS getting cutbacks, et cetera. So, you know, it doesn't just happen in our year. It's been happening all this time. But we need a little Pete Seeger right this very minute, if you know what I'm saying. We sure could use it. Here is one. It's Bruce Springsteen, Pete Seeger, other folks during the Barack Obama jubilant 2009 inauguration. Pre-Trumpian age. Boy, was it a different feeling.
We'd like you to join us, and perhaps with the greatest song ever written about our home, to the father of American folk music, Pete Seeger, his grandson, Tom. Lead us, Pete.
You sing it with us. We'll give you the words. When I was walking that ribbon of highway,
as I went walking that ribbon of highway,
keys. touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Yeah, there's this guy with a ticket to Mexico. No, he couldn't look much stranger. Walking in a hall with his things and all. Alan said he was a Lone Ranger. Coming into Los Angeles. Bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bag, if you please, Mr. Customs Man.
Social justice or social change, you know, he's a beacon. I will never lead that life. I can only aspire to some of the parts, and I'm not sure if anyone will again. He's just a unique figure. There's not going to be another piece of figure.
Long live Pete Seeger. And long live Toshi. I wonder, do you remember this song?
Little boxes on the hip side, little boxes.
Thank you.
Pete Seeger. Amy Beth Arkley Show, lots of fun reveling in the celebration of Pete Seeger. Ending because of my own talking over the song there. I thought it was over. So sorry. Good stuff indeed. Had a great time reveling in the tradition of Pete Seeger. We need his mission. We need his music now. Boy, oh boy. Thank you, Lita Shubert, for coming on and spreading the word. Her great new book, Listen, for young readers is available. Pete Seeger, Got America Singing. We'll post the details. LitaShubert.com is her website. Post the details along with the podcast when it becomes available. You know all the shows are archived as such. You can follow the Amy Beth Arkwee Show at the Blog Talk Radio site, also on Stitcher and Mixcloud, iTunes. Net now, and all roads lead back to the website, amybetharkowee.com. Don't forget, I appreciate the live tweeting, by the way, 24/7 proposition, chime in when it works for you at AB Writes. You can follow our producer, Trudy Hart, on Twitter at Radio Trudy. Friend me on Facebook, and we'll get together. You know, we will, indeed. So I hope you have yourself a happy, healthy, safe July 4th weekend. Thanks to the TCS crew. Did I thank them? Trudy and Aurora in the booth, MLA headquarters. They got us going, and especially with these music shows. To work in it, so we do appreciate it. Hey, come back and see us, won't you? On the Amy Beth Arkwee Show, got to leave you with one more from Pete Seeger. Take care. I love y'all.
Perhaps the best-known song of Woody's, though, is one that I'm convinced is going to last as long as any song in the world. It'll be known like Auld Lang Syne or something the world over. Again, it was something that actually happened to him. I've sung this song, but I'll sing it again, of the place that I lived on the wild, windy plain, in the month of April, the county called Gray. Here's what all of the people there say. So long, been good to know you. So long, been good to know you. So long, been good to know you. The dusty old dust is getting my home. And I gotta be drifting along. The dust storm came and it came like thunder. Dusted us over, it covered us under. Blocked out the traffic, it blocked out the sun. And straight for home all the people did run. Oh, it's been good to know you. Oh, it's been good to know you. They sat in the dark and they sparked. They hugged and they kissed in that dusty old ark. They sighed, they cried, they hugged and they kissed. But instead of marriage, they were talking like this. Honey, so long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. The dusty old dust is getting my home. And I got to be drifting along. Well, the telephone rang and it jumped off the wall. That was the preacher, he'd been making his call. He said, kind friends, this may be the end. You got your last chance at salvation of sin. Well, the churches were jammed, the churches were packed. The dusty old dust storm, it blew so black. The preacher could not read a word of his text. He folded his back, took up collections. Oh,